Time to get the local view. He's the columnist for the Register Guard. Find his work on the cover of the sports page. Catch up online, registerguard.com. On Twitter, it's at AustinMeekRG. Austin, how you doing?
I'm good, Steve. How are you doing?
Great. Good weekend?
Great weekend. Had a little time with the family yesterday and did the grill and it was good. Some yard work. What about you?
Yeah, sounds very familiar. You know, when we talked last time, George Horton surfaced. There have been, I guess, two developments. One, the season ended. The second would be an issue of a new contract has surfaced. For some reason now, since they dismissed Mark Helfrich, I'm like, I really don't know what's going to happen. But this year and last year are disappointments. So start with the basics from what you've learned, who you've spoken with. Where are we at as far as Coach Horton staying?
I think we're pretty close to a deal getting done for George to come back. It's come together pretty quickly. And I think it just boils down to the fact that even though the past 2 years have been disappointing, there's still a lot of support for George within the department, around the department. If you look at his whole tenure in perspective, he's accomplished some significant things. 5 postseason appearances, trip to the Super Regionals. Now, I think everybody understands that the trajectory of the program is not what you want it to be, but I think that there's still enough support for George and enough hope within the department that they're going to give him one more shot to get this thing right.
Now, I know this might require a little speculation, but it's clear he said it. Coach Horton wants to be here to turn this around, and the athletic department obviously not willing to make a change. If it's just going to be a shorter contract, like maybe 2 years, would you say this is just kind of a mini compromise on all parts?
Well, I think it is certainly certainly a reality check probably for George, because he's not going to be making the same money that he was making under his previous deal, and he's not going to have the same security. I think in some ways it probably is going to be a little bit humbling for George. I'm sure that he'll be happy to be back, and that certainly was not a guarantee based on the last 2 years. But I think it's probably a message that, hey, we like you. We want you to be our coach. We want you to succeed here. We want to give you every opportunity to succeed here. But this is sort of the last chance. I think everybody's going to realize that if it doesn't work out this time, the leash has gotten pretty short. You know, if they don't win next year, and if they don't show significant progress next year, I think that's what it's going to be about, is, you know, beyond just the wins and losses, I think Oregon's going to want to see it from George just a willingness to adapt a little bit and to change and to really take a hard look at the program and do some things differently. And if that doesn't happen, I don't think Oregon's going to be tied to George for a long time into the future. It's basically going to be, you know, let's see some changes next year. And if we don't, I don't think Oregon's going to be in a position financially where they're going to be obligated a lot for George beyond next year.
Yeah, that's a great take. Let's move to softball, back in the World Series, Washington Thursday. Beyond specifics and, you know, breaking down the matchup, Mike White has never lost a regional game. Now they're a kind of a regular in the World Series. They only had 2 seniors make substantial contributions. Are we comfortable just saying, man, he has built a machine, and this is a program built to last?
Yeah, when you can be in a quote-unquote rebuilding year, start 35-0, and then roll through a regional and a super regional without losing the game, yeah, I'd say you've officially got it up and running. And that's what Mike White has done. The last hurdle for them now, I guess, is to actually win a title.
Yeah.
They've been great in regionals. They've been very good in super regionals. They haven't brought home the ultimate trophy yet. I think they've got a shot this year. I subscribe to the theory that you just keep knocking on the door and eventually you're going to break it down. I think there's no reason why Oregon shouldn't win one. I don't think there's any reason not to. So I don't know if it'll be this year. They do have a young team. It is still, you know, they are still rebuilding in a way, even if it hasn't been evident in the results. But, yeah, it's a great program, and I'm interested to see what happens in Oklahoma City.
Talking with Austin Meek of the Register Guard. The Prefontaine, you know, you get the usual loaded field, Olympians. You wrote about the concerns expressed by Tom Jordan, the meet director, that was unrelated to the competition. You know, the now thrice overturned travel ban. What kind of troubles did athletes run into and did get, you know, getting over here, the obviously the international competitors, and did it get maybe less attention because the big names were actually able to make it without a sweat?
Well, that is true. The athletes who had visa issues for the Prefontaine were not among the real high profile headliners, but it was significant enough this year that Tom Jordan was obviously concerned by it. At his press conference before the meet, he specifically brought up a Russian hurdler, whose name I would absolutely butcher, but a Russian hurdler who had been to the U.S. before, had competed in this meet before, and for some reason, his consulate did not approve him for a visa until right before the meet when he didn't have time to travel here. He was one of roughly 10 athletes who experienced this, and I think it was troubling for Tom because the pre-classic depends on athletes from all over the world being able to travel here. It depends on being able to get the best and to fill the field from top to bottom with absolutely the best available athletes. And if it's becoming more difficult for athletes to get here, then that is a worry. And I know there's a lot to balance here.
Yeah.
You know, we've got to be careful. Things like we saw in Manchester, everybody's certainly aware of, you know, the need to be careful, but it's just kind of common sense when you're dealing with athletes who have traveled to the U.S. frequently. It doesn't seem like it should be that hard for them to come in here and compete.
No, that was an eye-popping story, to say the least. I want to get to the passing of Frank DeFord, longtime sports writer, Sports Illustrated, Real Sports, a novelist, an Ivy Leaguer. He's the first sports writer to win the Kiplinger Award for Distinguished Contributions to Journalism. You know, I don't like calling him old school because he's always been relevant. So for someone like yourself, who I would consider a highly credible, positive representative of the Fourth Estate, your thoughts on the passing of a pretty unique guy?
Well, thank you for the kind words. I'm not sure if I totally qualify for that, but thank you. I think the thing that I remember about Frank DeFord is he brought a level of sophistication to sports writing, and those are two words that you don't hear in the same sentence very often. you know, you don't think of a really intelligent, sophisticated people when you think of sports writers. You think of people who have stains on their shirt and kind of schlubby, but Frank DeFord was a very distinguished person, you know, and I never met him. I certainly didn't know him personally, but my impression of him from everything I'd seen and heard was that he really had a commanding presence when he walked into a room, and you know, he brought a charisma to sports writing that maybe wasn't there before him. So I think he really paved the way for sports writing to get a lot better. You know, showed that you can be a smart, sophisticated person and still write about sports and find a deeper meaning in sports, which I think has become the template for a lot of people who write about sports now. And you know, certainly it's an inspiration to me as somebody who enjoys writing about maybe the, you know, beyond just the games, you know, the personalities of people. I think Frank DeFord was one of the pioneers who showed how that could be done.
No, he's an all-time favorite of mine. He let's just say he enhanced this industry. I want to get to the NBA Finals. Rumor has it they're actually going to play this week. maybe the most uneventful three rounds I've ever seen, and I saw Bill Russell on the Celtics. But beyond the super team debate, I mean, this series has kind of loomed since Halloween. Do you have a preference here, a rooting interest, or just an analytical thought on Cavs-Warriors?
Well, frankly, I'd almost forgotten that the NBA season was still going. It feels like about a month ago when we had the last playoff game. I was sitting at home this weekend thinking, boy, it'd be nice if there was an NBA game on. At home, I could actually watch it. But any momentum that the playoffs had, which was very little to begin with, but any momentum the playoffs had going into this is just completely evaporated in the what seems like about 3 weeks between games. But I'm sure that when it gets started this week, I will get re-engaged. And I do think it's going to be a compelling series. I might pick the Cavs, not for any particular reason. They do have LeBron. That's a good place to start. And I kind of think even though the Warriors are probably the favorite on paper, I do wonder if maybe this is the time when the absence of Steve Kerr starts to become more of an issue. Boy, you couldn't write a better plot twist than Mike Brown getting forced out of Cleveland, and Cleveland wins the title last year, beating Golden State, and now this year it's Mike Brown on the sideline for the Warriors filling in for Steve Kerr. That's like almost like Shakespeare, the way that all came together. So I do think it's going to be a really interesting series. I think Golden State's probably the favorite, but just to be a contrarian, I guess I'll pick the Cavs.
All right. Well, because of the odds, it's Golden State's pretty overwhelming, so if I was going to bet, I would take Cleveland, but that's just my degenerate mind. let's wrap with Oregon men's golf. Beyond the results of the weekend and you know what's been going on today, you had a story on Wyndham Clark, who's a redshirt senior, transferred from Oklahoma State, just an incredible player. But this was not a case of a guy leaving his original school on the best of terms. For those who missed, what were the rather, I guess the term would be, awkward circumstances that led to him leaving Stillwater?
Yeah, if you don't know anything about this guy, and I didn't know anything about him until he got here, if you just looked at the season he's had this year, you'd think, wow, you know, this guy's led kind of a charmed existence. But actually, his path in college has been pretty rocky. He started out at Oklahoma State, had a great freshman year at Oklahoma State, and then his mom passed away, and he had two really tough years there, which culminated with him getting benched last year for the NCAA meet that was at Eugene Country Club. I think that was kind of the last straw for him, and he decided to transfer and had been recruited by Oregon out of high school and called up Casey Martin, and certainly Casey was really eager to have him on the team because Oregon was trying to replace Aaron Wise, who was an NCAA champion, and Wyndham Clark, I think Casey believed, and it's proven this year, had the ability to be that type of player for Oregon. The NCAA meet has not gone for him as well as he'd hoped. He went into it as probably one of the favorites and hasn't played at that level, but Oregon is still playing in the Final Four despite kind of an off tournament from their number one player, which is pretty remarkable in itself. But it's sort of like what we talked with softball. This was supposed to be a rebuilding year for Casey Martin's team, but getting Wyndham Clark has put them in a position where they're still playing in the tournament in the Final Four.
No, it's an awesome story. And again, you could archive all Austin does either on his Twitter account, AustinMeekRG, or registerguard.com. All right, Austin, great stuff as always. Always appreciate you getting our Tuesday off and rolling. Have a great week, and we'll catch up in 7 days.
Okay, thanks, Steve.
All right, take it easy, Austin.